Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ann Hillman. We've been hearing for months about Alaska's fiscal crisis. The budget is being cut and we'll have to dip into reserves. Some economists predict that the state will run out of savings in less than a decade. But is there an alternative? Can the state make money for the general fund from sources other than oil revenue? Some economists say yes. Today we'll discuss optimizing the state's financial assets. That means using our savings to make more money. In our studios in Alaska Public Media, we have Joe Beadle, the CEO of North Rim Bank, who's been involved with finances and investments for more than 30 years. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Anne.
A very simple summary of this idea is to use Alaska's $100 billion in savings, like the Permanent Fund and the Retirement Fund, as collateral for borrowing money. The collateral will be locked into place and that couldn't be spent, and then the borrowed money would be invested. And then these revenues from these investments could then be funneled into the general fund. Is that sort of a good super basic summary?
That is.
All right. So let's start by looking at the current financial situation in the state. And we have a graph showing this the status quo revenue path. Could you kind of explain what we see in this graph?
Well, we are already experiencing a time that we've experienced before, although this one's much deeper, where our revenue income, predominantly from oil, is less than our state spend. So we're in a deficit scenario, and we're using the statutory budget reserve and the constitutional budget reserve and or the earnings reserve of the permanent fund to balance our budget.
Okay, and so if you look at that graph, there's that steady line. If we keep spending steady, there's still a gap between what we bring in with how we're currently spending money. So we're in this situation, everyone knows, because oil prices have dropped and they make most of our revenue. But the state's in sort of this unique situation because we've got so much set aside in funds. I mean, we've got $53 billion in our permanent fund. We've got others. What does it mean to use these savings as collateral?
Well, first, last year we made more money on our investments than we did off of oil. So the state has already built up such large investments that whether it's $2 or $3 or $4 billion that we're making on the permanent fund, it has already exceeded at least from last year.
And wait, so is that investment income, can we use that or that just goes straight back into the permanent fund?
That's a great question. So part of it is the corpus. It's protected.
Okay.
It can't, principle, it cannot be drawn on.
Okay.
Part of it is inflation proofing. And inflation proofing meaning how can we spend tomorrow's money or 10 year from now money that will yield us the same. Inflation proofing 2 or 3% is kind of average. And then on top of that, our earnings in excess of inflation proofing, and we call those the earnings reserve, and there's about $8 billion in those earnings reserve. And the legislature could spend those dollars today with a simple majority vote, but of course the concern of the citizens would be that we're invading the permanent fund.
Mm-hmm.
But the statute and the constitutional segment on the permanent fund allows them to do that. Now, the concept of utilizing the fund, this $54 billion today, is maybe to pledge assets of the permanent fund, not the state, not putting the state at risk, but certain assets of the permanent fund, pledging them for a really long-term loan, 10 to 15 year loan, maybe borrowing at 3%, and hoping to earn 8%. And so the difference of 5%, mm-hmm. we call arbitrage, which is a good term, and that's
okay.
Income, net income to the state, and that could be another $1 billion a year for the permanent fund.
Okay, so just to pause and take a step back, there's a majority of the permanent fund that nobody can touch, it is there no matter what.
Correct.
There's a portion of the permanent fund, a smaller portion, that's in excess of what needs to be locked away.
Correct.
That could potentially be used to directly fund things like schools or highways or whatever, or it could be used to invest again and make more money. What is currently happening with that chunk?
It's actually being invested as though it was corpus principal.
Okay.
So it's enjoying the same returns. It's not like very short term or just in a deposit account. It is invested in the same manner and fashion. So our permanent fund has grown faster by compounding the earnings and leaving it in the fund. So it's been a very good thing. It's allowed the fund to grow more rapidly and compound the earnings. So if you took it out, you would actually be limiting then its future growth. At the same time, this concept of collateralization or borrowing against the fund, then the fund becomes bigger, more efficient, and possibly able to do more diversified types of investments as well.
Okay, so let's jump straight into that whole idea of borrowing against the fund, because that's the idea that some economists, some people at State are sort of playing around with, right? Mm-hmm. So let's look at this next graph, which shows collateralization. It's a great complicated term, but it basically means using, explain what that means. The way I understand it is basically we're saying we have this huge pool of money. We will put this aside and not spend this huge pool of money so the X company knows that we have it, and then we'll borrow money and we can invest that borrowed money. Is that how that works?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
So currently, if you wanted to borrow, you could borrow against your savings account and it's not very high risk. So people will lend you against a time certificate deposit, against a stock or a bond.
Okay.
At a very much lower interest rate than what they would charge if you're speculating on some new venture. And so the permanent fund can say, here are current stocks and bonds and investments that we would pledge specifically, borrowing more money. And because it's a low risk, A, it's the permanent fund, B, it's a specific stock or bond being pledged. And so the permanent fund could probably borrow it over a 10 or 15 year period, mm-hmm. at maybe 3%. That gives them $10, $20 billion more money to invest. It's costing 3%, but hopefully it's earning 8%, and your net yield is 5%. And so it is real. There is some logic to it. There are also downsides to it.
Okay. So if we're looking at this graph, I mean, you can see the orange part, it goes up above that general fund, like how much we would be spending each year. So graphically, it seems like this brilliant idea, but you keep saying, hopefully we mm-hmm. could earn 8%. Hopefully this would happen. Mm-hmm. So I would love to talk about the risk, because this seems almost too easy. Let's start back with a little bit of history. So we've got the permanent fund. Can we legally use that as collateral? Can we use it in this way?
Well, the permanent fund board of trustees has a responsibility to the state to be prudent. When they first started the fund, it was a very conservative investment. We would call it U.S. Treasuries, bonds, bills, notes, agencies of the federal government. And then they started in stocks, and then they started in alternative investments and real estate and leverage transactions, things like malls and real estate, holding apartment buildings.
Okay.
And so over time, the permanent fund has matured into a more sophisticated fund. At the same time, they have to be cautious. It's a risk reward. How much risk are you willing to take for what reward? And over time, they've been able to balance this risk. And the risk is really a portfolio, just like we all have, hopefully getting ready for retirement someday. And in that risk arrangement, you have to decide how much risk can you afford or want or psychologically be willing to take. And then what happens if I call it the valley of death right now. The valley of death is that we need more revenue for the state. You cannot cut yourself to prosperity.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that specifically in this image. I mean, there's this huge weight.
So we have to have revenues eventually come back to match expenditures. Mm-hmm. So this would hopefully be one avenue. The chart shows that oil's going to grow back, that we'll have more volume eventually. And then this concept of the permanent fund and investment earnings, and then leveraging borrowing against the permanent fund to invest more. So you ask about risk, and the risk is we just in the last, you know, since 2002, the dot-com bubble. So when IT crashed, those investments, went very negative. Mm-hmm. And if the permanent fund would have been invested in a lot of NASDAQ IT stock, they would have taken a big hit.
But we're so diversified. I mean, even I know that. You have to diversify your assets, just like you said. But I was looking at the chart with the permanent fund earnings, and it goes up and up and up and up. And then you hit 2008, and it goes negative, and then it goes back up. So yes, we have secure, diverse assets in the permanent fund. And you keep saying, okay, we'd have these diverse assets if we were to borrow against the permanent fund. But what happens when you have that crash?
So, you know, the permanent fund has consultants, and they will in the future as well, you know, layering on this concept. Callan and Associates is the financial advisor. The directors have to listen, and they do what they call standard deviations of risk in this portfolio. And today, the current model that they're working under could put at risk 5 out of the next 20 years. You could have 5 years where you had a down market of $6.5 billion loss. So even as currently structured, we have no guarantees looking out. That's why you would want a time horizon of 10 to 15 years. You're borrowing and you're investing so that you could average that out and yield over that time the 8% while you paid the 3% cost.
Okay. So we're talking a little bit about financial models. Let's look at what is referred to as the efficient frontier. So basically looking at kind of ways to optimize our portfolio. And looking at this model, it sort of shows a risk versus revenues and what the state's at right now. So the red dot shows the status quo, what the state is currently doing with our financial assets. And it looks like we're actually reasonably high risk with pretty low returns. And as I understand it, that's because we're having to dip into our savings to meet all of our needs, correct?
So in this case, no. The permanent fund itself, I don't know the genesis of this chart, so I don't know who created it, but the permanent fund itself actually functions on an efficient frontier. They're required to. If you took all of the state, I would agree that there is risk from our bond rating and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the concept of utilizing the permanent fund, they're already working on an efficient frontier. And they have an obligation as what we call prudent investor rule not to take too much risk. So currently, Callan and Associates helps them model. They get paid for it. Mm-hmm. And so layering this on,
this is looking at the whole state, the financial status of the entire state.
Sorry, I agree, this would be very helpful.
Okay, so this is looking at the entire state, and we're at fairly high risk with low returns because we have so much sitting that's not being reinvested. And the way it's been explained to me is that if we were to take on debt and then leverage that debt and have very diversified assets, we could potentially be at the yellow stage in that chart. So it's less risk but higher returns.
Thank you for that further explanation. So it is true that when the state thinks they need to spend $3 or $5 billion, they have to have it available to spend. It can't be invested. It's liquid, and you don't have liquid investments subject to wild gyrations in the market. So you put them in a checking account, in essence. Okay. If you put them in an investment account and said that it was a 15-year environment, you're not going to get 0.25%. You're going to get the 8% return, and so there's perfect logic for the state overall to try to keep their funds invested in this long-term horizon versus this short-term, I might need it tomorrow.
Okay.
So it does make sense.
All right. So if we were to use our savings and borrow against our savings, first off, I mean, why is taking on debt a good thing?
Well, taking on debt is not a good thing unless you can make more money on the investments than you're paying on the debt. In this case, the state of Alaska can borrow at a very favorable rate or pledging these assets we can and then invest. As well, the state doesn't pay income taxes like you or I do on the earnings. So by having this sovereign government investment not paying taxes on this gain, it is a better hedge, a better arbitrage than most people could do.
So you keep using words like hedge, which I'm not going to deny sounds scary. Sound like you're putting our safety mm-hmm. net at risk if we are to do something like this.
Actually, the term of art hedge is a risk reducer. So a derivative might scare people, but hedge should say I'm hedging my bets.
Okay.
And that I'm protecting myself. And in this case, you're moving those dollars you might need for tomorrow into a long-term investment. And if you can keep them there and resolve, even if the market goes down in a difficult period, not question yourself, stay in for that 10 to 15 years, you're going to eventually, on average, earn that 7, 8%. And so borrowing, the lenders will like the fact that they have great collateral. Stocks and bonds and government agencies pledged will get us a very low interest rate. So the lender likes it, and then the investment can go out longer term and have a higher risk, but a much higher return.
Okay. So let's stop with a couple steps with this. The lender, who would we go to borrow billions of dollars, millions of dollars?
The market, Wall Street, New York, has plenty of people that would like to lend to the state of Alaska, pledged, and they would in turn have other people that would own pieces of it. But people would love to make 3% when they might only be getting 2% from, say, an equivalent U.S. Treasury, but at no greater risk. So it would be pretty easy to borrow money as the permanent fund against really good investments.
Okay. Is anyone else doing something like this? Other states, other countries doing things like this?
Private individuals do it. Sovereign funds do it. The sovereign funds, for those that aren't familiar with the term, would be the Norwegian Permanent Fund, the Saudi Arabian National Fund, where they've sold oil in this case, and they have a permanent fund like us. And it's sovereign, meaning it's protected as though a government would be protected. Mm-hmm. And they don't pay taxes on it. And so there are cases, but just like the state's permanent fund has learned and become more sophisticated in its investments, this would be another level that needs proper due diligence and review.
Okay, proper due diligence, what does that include?
Well, it's third parties validating the model. So this model that you're sharing with me needs to be then specific. It needs to be taken to the next step. It needs to be presented to the permanent fund board of trustees to say that they in turn, acting on all of our behalf, safety, soundness, risk, return, that they believe it would be considered prudent to do so. And those investments can't be political. They have to be arm's length to the market, making investments as the permanent fund currently does.
Okay. So as the permanent fund currently does, but again, we mentioned before that there was a dip. 2008, there was a dip. So when you borrow money, I know as an individual, I have to pay back principal and interest. Mm-hmm. As a state, I just have to pay back interest, correct?
Well, it depends on how the state borrows. They would more than likely do a borrowing that it was all due at maturity, instead of like our mortgage on our home, where we're making equal principal payments and it's paid off in mm-hmm. 15 or 30 years. In this case, the state can and usually does say, I'll pay it off in 10 or 15 years and only pay interest only during that period. That's totally permissible with these kind of pledged assets.
Okay, so if the economy crashes, how do we pay that interest that year? Like if we're using the interest earnings to fund mm-hmm. government, how do we?
Well, even in 2008, when the permanent fund, like every fund, lost money, They still had to pay for their staff. They still had to pay for their consultants. So the permanent fund lost money, and you just take it out of the pool. It's subject to appropriation by the state, but you pay less salaries. Even our bank has not lost money in a given year, but certain banks in 08 did. And they still had to pay salaries. You just eat your equity. You eat your reserves. But on average, it works.
Okay. So we have to think about this in the long term. We have to think about, you know, over a huge period that kind of averages out with the ups and downs. So the big question people might ask, that if the permanent fund is tied up as collateral, because as collateral it can't be spent, how does that impact your PFD? Because, yeah, I mean, people are always like, oh, PFD, I can get my new snow machine. But, I mean, some people rely on that to meet their bills.
Well, let's separate the PFD. The PFD comes from earnings, and it's over a five-year spread. So it's how much have we realized in earnings over 5 years, and it goes into a bucket that is designated to be paid out in dividends. So you lose in a single year, it will impact the five-year average, which we have just gone through. We have just erased the bad 08, and our permanent fund dividends jumped to $1,800. So it is true that in a given year, if you took more risk, you could actually have a deeper V, a deeper loss in that year, and it could impact the permanent fund dividend over that five-year range. And in the period of a 10 or 15-year period, though, you would be better off because the earnings would be higher, there would be more available for payout.
Okay. All right. So the permanent fund would continue, and just like now, it would potentially go up and down.
There could be more volatility, though, which is your point.
Okay.
And that is a risk.
I guess that's a risk associated with a lot of investments. Are there other risks that need to be considered before the state would go through with a plan like this?
I think it needs to also be tested with our bond rating agencies, you know, in terms of what would they perceive. My assumption is that they would feel like it was a revenue enhancement. It was helping balance from just oil to other investment returned income. So I think it would be a net positive. There also needs to be this concept that you don't pledge the permanent fund to, say, a natural gas pipeline, because there could be the earnings reserve or some portion thereof, but if you pledged, it really needs to be a prudent investor rule. It needs to be this, what we talk about, asset allocation and this pool of investments that are diversified. So you really have to have those same high standards, and you can't say, I want to do this borrowing and then I'm going to go do a political investment with it. It really has to be the permanent fund trustees, who do a great job, would need to continue to be prudent, diversified investors, and utilizing this efficient frontier, risk, reward, and balance. You can't take too much risk, because long-term, you're risking the fund.
Okay. All right. So the next idea I need you to explain a little bit. One thing is to use all of these funds as collateral, but the next idea is securitization. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it's a term of art evidently being utilized by those that are studying this. The first thing, when we borrow against certain of the funds, if it's just the permanent fund and it's $55 billion, we probably shouldn't be borrowing more than some amount, half of it at the most.
So really borrowing like $25 billion?
Well, $25 billion I think would be the maximum that the state should consider. There are others that would think they should leverage it higher. As a banker, we would be more concerned.
Okay.
So they've borrowed and pledged some of these assets, these stocks and bonds. There are other assets that are left. And, you know, there are borrowers out there that are AAA corporations that if they had collateral, if they had stocks and bonds, so you actually lend, you hypothecate, you pledge, it's like you helping your daughter by giving her your savings account and she can borrow against it. Your fund would be at risk but you believe your daughter's going to pay you back. Anyway, the concept is you let somebody else have your collateral, your stocks and bonds, and you get a fee for doing that. And you wouldn't do it, in this case, you would do it to AAA corporations. So they utilize unpledged other assets to allow someone to borrow against them. They happen to be AAA companies. So it's another revenue stream that utilizes the corpus of the permanent fund.
And just makes
more money.
Makes more money and makes it even more complicated, it seems.
And there is risk. It needs, the due diligence has to be modeled, tested for such things as the 2008 Great Recession in the United States, where all of our investments got hurt.
All right. Thank you very much for all of the complicated explanations of financial terms. The idea, again, is to potentially use our financial funds to leverage more investment. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on Alaska Edition. You can learn more at alaskapublic.org.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.